On today's episode, there are three big ticket trades on the menu as we get into the heart of trade deadline season. The White Sox make yet another move, dealing away three major trade chips to the Yankees. The Diamondbacks acquire a powerful right fielder for three minor league infielders, and the Nats acquire two relief pitchers from across the country to shore up their bullpen. We're covering it all on the DFA podcast. Welcome to episode 17 of DFA, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus. I'm Brian Grosnick of BP, and joining me, a special guest co-host, Ben Diamond of Baseball Prospectus, and he's also an editor at the Dynasty Guru. It's a little early, but trade season is heating up, so how does it feel? How does it feel to be on the show and talking about trades?
It's exciting. It's a whirlwind right now. All the trades going on, baseball games going. Very exciting.
Yeah, it's a good time. It seems like it's a little earlier than usual. But also joining us, we're bringing him in a little bit earlier than usual since we're going to be really like laser focused on three trades today. Producer Sean Brody. Sean, how's it going, man?
Good. We actually got some transactions to give you analysis on.
I know, it's great. So much of the early goings of this show was a little bit about like, hey, this guy is going on the 60-day DL with Tommy John surgery. How much fun is that? And now we've actually got like real trades with real major league players, real prospects. So it's exciting. So we're going to cover three major trades. We covered Jose Quintana on the last episode of the show. So we're going to start things off by talking about the big blockbuster between the Yankees and the White Sox. It seems like we're going to talk about the White Sox every episode, but you know, maybe they'll finally stop trading some talent. So we'll open it up with the first trade, the Yankees acquiring Todd Frazier, David Robertson, and Tommy Canley from the White Sox in exchange for a package of prospects, three prospects headlined by Blake Rutherford, and the added benefit of the Yankees shipping Tyler Clippard off the team into the White Sox, which I know many fans will be very fond of.
Thank God.
Ben, yeah, I was going to say, Ben, you're a Yankees guy, so what are your thoughts on the deal? What do you think about this whole thing and the Yankees giving up a prospect of Rutherford's caliber?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. It was a big question going into this trade deadline, would the Yankees be buying or not, especially when they spent all of last trade deadline rebuilding. Quick turnaround, but they're playing well ahead of the contention window. So I think I really do like the move by Cashman just to go out and buy, especially he's given up a really, really good prospect in Blake Rutherford. But when you look at that kind of system depth the Yankees have, they already have five major league caliber outfielders Aaron Judge, Jacoby Ellsbury, Brett Gardner, Aaron Hicks, and Clint Frazier. And they got a ton of other guys down on the farm, possible top prospect Esteban Florial down there too. So, I mean, I like that they're trading from a strength here and building up a weakness, which is their first base. If you look at the Yankees' first base this year, they've been pretty dreadful. They're batting the first baseman on the year batting 183, second worst WRC plus in the league. So really anything that they do to improve the corners between Chase Headley and the whole mess that is at first base is a good move. So adding Todd Frazier there, I really do like that. And then, of course, they're building up that bullpen. I think they're pretty much trying to do that kind of Kansas City Royals thing where they say, you know what, our starting rotation isn't going to be that great, but if we build up that bullpen again, maybe we can make a deep run. So I really like what they're doing here.
So the other prospects that went the other way to the White Sox are Ian Clarkin and Tito Polo. Do you have any like strong feelings about either of these guys heading to Chicago in the deal, or is it really just Rutherford who seems to be the big cost for the team?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Ian Clarkin was a pretty big prospect a couple years ago when the Yankees had a bottom 10 farm system, but he's dealt with a couple injuries, lost some velocity. His ceiling's a lot more limited now. So, I mean, he's definitely somebody that could be a big leaguer and has value, but, I mean, when looking at the grand scheme of things, especially given how many names the Yankees do have down there, I'm really not beating myself up over that. Same thing with Tito Polo. He was a throw-in last year in the Ivan Nova deal, and honestly, they're not going to miss him, especially given how many guys they have out there.
And as I kind of touched on before, Tyler Clippard did not really endear himself to Yankees fans at all. So replacing him with Kane Lee and with David Robertson going back to the Yankees, actually both these guys going back to the Yankees, that must be nice for fans of not watching saves get blown or leads get blown.
Yeah, Girardi always has that one or two pitchers that he just trusts way too much in big situations, and sometimes it feels like Brian Cashman's like, I got to take the power out of your hands. Get rid of this guy. So I don't think too many people are complaining this time around about getting rid of Clippard.
So, Sean, I want to talk a little bit about the White Sox, because on our last episode with Zach Kreiser, you and I, we talked a little bit about how you maybe thought the White Sox were going to be ready to compete as soon as next year. How do you feel about that now?
It's weird, right? Because Rutherford is farther off than really any of the other guys that they had looked to acquire. I mean, you look at their top 10 on MLB.com now. 8 of the top 10 they've acquired in trades, whether it be the Nationals, the Red Sox, Cubs. And it's kind of weird, right? Because now they have this really stocked farm system. And I think I said that they would be competing for the wild card next year. I'd probably take that back and feel pretty confident to say that's not going to happen now. But I think that they might be a team that, like you said, in 2019 goes out and does the Cubs thing where they get a frontline starting pitcher because their starting pitching isn't – nobody's there who's really established. They don't really have an established – veteran guy who they know isn't just a prospect that's going to end up folding down the road. Not that any of these prospects will. Michael Kopech's a guy that you wonder if he's going to stay in the starting rotation. Giolito had questions. Ronaldo Lopez has been really good. But it's something where I think that might be 1 year farther than I had thought last episode, and I don't know if it's because of this trade, but at the same time, I probably should have realized that in retrospect, I guess. So.
Well, I mean, I think it was an interesting opinion. I obviously didn't go all in on your opinion on that because I do think they're a little bit of a ways out. And Rutherford and Jimenez, the stars of the last two trades they've made, both those guys are probably 2 years away, I would imagine, at the very least. So, you know, even if they do turn out to be super duper stars, 2019 is probably when we're going to see them at the soonest. I mean, Jimenez maybe could come up in September of next year or something, but that'd be pretty aggressive. But somebody who is coming up to replace Todd Frazier on the White Sox is Yoan Moncada. That should be kind of interesting at least, right, guys?
So, yeah, right, because he came up last year. He has 31 days of service time. He should, if he stays on the roster from now to the end of the year, get 75 days. So he's still at about 106, not really a year of time. He's not going to be a Super 2, so it looks like they're going to be able to give him kind of that second look that, okay, your first one didn't go well with the Red Sox. Now here's what's going to happen. We'll see if it'll help you. Looking back at their farm, though, I'm really loving a potential outfield of Elroy Jimenez, Luis Robert, and Blake Rutherford. That would be, I believe the kids call that very good.
It could be. I mean, it certainly could be. That looks really good from a distance. I don't know. What do you think about the White Sox and their long-term plans, future, with Moncada coming up and this outfield of Jimenez and Robert and now adding Blake Rutherford to the mix? Ben, what do you think about this White Sox team? Is it bulletproof, or do you think that there's still some risk here?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we're dealing with prospects, especially a couple of years away, that you're going to learn no matter how many guys you have, you're never bulletproof. But at the same time, they've been doing an amazing job just building up not only quantity, but high-end quantity in some of these guys. So I think it is dangerous to project some of these outfields, especially when you're looking at a guy like Luis Robert, something like that, who's only 19 years old. It's probably a couple of years away. But all these guys, I think, could be hitting in 2019, 2020, and I think it's going to be really exciting then, especially when you got some cornerstones in there. It's not just a bunch of guys that could be like above average players. It's going to be some guys that can really look like franchise cornerstones.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you there. I'm just looking now. Moncada's had a 273 true average in AAA this year with Charlotte, a little bit above average. He's had over double-digit home runs. He's had double-digit steals. So it's not quite the offensive profile that makes you stand up and go, whoa, this guy's really something special. But he has been succeeding at the highest level of the minor league. So I think now is probably a good time for him to come up, especially considering the what you'd been saying before, Sean, about the service time issue, where it's probably not going to be too much of a Super 2 consideration at this point. So I'm going to ask one more question of you guys about this trade before we go. Ben, who do you think is going to be the most impactful guy going back to the Yankees in this deal? Do you think it's going to be Robertson, Canely, or Frazier in this move?
Yeah, that's a funny question. I think I had the pleasure today of driving around a bunch and listening to all that great Yankees radio and all the players calling in. That was fun. There, I got to hear some great Robinson Cano trade proposals. But regardless of that, I think a lot of guys were considering Tommy Canely to be the throw-in. And I think that's pretty off-base considering how good he's been. He's striking out. I think he has 60 strikeouts in 36 innings, 50 ERA. So I think just based on value-wise, I think he is going to be making the biggest impact, especially since he has another, I think, 3 years of control. At the same time, I think just based on the biggest upgrade, the biggest difference maker right now, Todd Frazier, even if he hits 200 with some power, is a pretty big upgrade over whatever the Yankees are throwing out there right now between, like, Garrett Cooper, G-Man Choi, and then all the injured players and Chris Carter and all that. So I think if I say what player is going to make the biggest difference this year, I do think it would be Todd Frazier.
What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I think that he hit it spot on. Tommy Canely is a guy that down the road is going to look like a steal in this trade, and it's weird because I don't really think that we just kind of assume Tommy Canely's a throw-in. I think that because his name isn't known, we might say, hey, that's just they toss that in. But I think that it might be a little more understanding that he was the centerpiece of this deal.
So you're saying that, you know, from the Yankees' perspective, that's probably the reason why they had to give up a prospect, the quality of Rutherford. It's not really so much about the rentals of Robertson and Frazier, but you think Canely was probably the reason why the team would have to give up so much.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that's weird, too, is that this season we've seen a lot of these early trades involve guys that are controllable past this season. Mm-hmm. And I find that weird. I don't know what y'all think about that, but I don't know that we've really seen some of those type of deals in the recent years.
Well, I know we've seen a few of them. I mean, I'm just trying to think back to last season. And, you know, yes, Yoenis Cespedes was a rental when you talk about that sort of deal. And there were some other ones that were considered rentals. But you're right. It does seem like more of the players involved in the early trades, and we'll get to some of the other trades later. There's another one that springs to mind when you talk about controllable talent. It does seem like there's some more controllable guys, because I think that's what's bringing back premium talent, especially in the case of the White Sox. I do want to throw this in about Canely. He's been extraordinary this year. You know, 15 strikeouts per nine. He's not walking anybody. Is anybody else concerned that this may not be sustainable? Because he's never been this good before, and his career walk rate before the season was way high. And now all of a sudden he's not walking anybody. I mean, in 2015, he walked seven guys per nine. In 2016, he walked six guys per nine. Like, I'm not saying that there isn't a sustainable, worthwhile difference to his repertoire at this point. But, I mean, there's no concern at all that maybe this is not really an elite reliever. It could be somebody who's a step down, or maybe two steps down, or something closer to his 2016 self.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you have to look back to Tommy Canely when he started as a professional. He was actually on the Yankees, and I think maybe he was taken in the Rule 5 draft because the Yankees left him unprotected. He went to the Colorado Rockies. It was because he could never throw strikes. Everybody knew that he had that kind of strikeout stuff. He could throw in the high 90s, a lot of talent there, but he never had that command that could make him work in the major leagues. So, I mean, you do have to look at that, and there's a chance he reverts. But, I mean, I think you have to look at, like, the Don Cooper effect there, that maybe they made some – I haven't seen anything particularly about this, so I'm just kind of guessing, but maybe some kind of key mechanical changes out there that they made with him to allow him to throw strikes. Because, I mean, it's not like he went from a 650 walk per nine rate from last year to, like, three or four. He's down to 1.75 this year, so he's really boasting pretty excellent control. So I think just because of that big jump and the White Sox track record of making guys much better, just I do believe that – I mean, there's going to be the chance that he does revert, but I'm much more willing to believe that this is the real him.
Yeah, and I think part of what you're saying is that if he does go to be a 3 or 4 walk per nine guy, that's still a really good reliever.
Yes,
Sean,
absolutely.
Do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, and part of me too wonders – you look back at 2015, he threw 40% changeups. You look at David Robertson. Robertson's almost a curveball-specific guy. He's still throws that fastball more than half the time, but it's very close. And if you look at bullpens and teams in general who throw the least amount of fastballs, the Yankees are in the lead. They beat the Astros. So I wonder if they're going to have him lean more on that changeup and if that'll even give him the ability to strike more out or if that'll make him go back to his ways of walking people. I think that that's something interesting, too, that might be down the line something we look into.
So I lied. I have one more quick question just for you, Ben. Do you think this is the last move that the Yankees made, or do you think they have another either big or small move left before we hit the deadline?
Yeah, I think when you look at a team like this that has such a deep farm system, I think they can afford to give up a few more chips to build for the future. So while I think that I can't imagine them trading for another rental like Todd Frazier. But at the same time, I could see them maybe being in on a guy like Sonny Gray. I don't know if Gerrit Cole is particularly available right now, but that's another guy that I know they've had their eyes on. So I could see them making another pretty big splash and adding a big rotation piece, but that's only going to be if he's controllable for next year and more.
Yeah, because while the Yankees' rotation, especially with the Michael Pineda injury, doesn't look so great right now, after losing Tanaka next year, it probably will look even worse. So you have to figure they're going to do something, if not at the deadline this year, then in the offseason to try to restock because, you know, theoretically you do need to have 5 starting pitchers that can take you through most of a season, although some teams are trying to prove that wrong, like the Royals from a couple of years ago. So, all right, so that's the biggest – in terms of number of players deal that we have had over the last couple of days, but there's been 2 other relatively large deals. The next one I want to talk about is a trade between the Tigers and the Diamondbacks, who, you know, the last Tigers-Diamondbacks trade was probably the Max Scherzer 3-way deal, which also involved the Yankees. I don't know if there's been another one since then. This one's not quite as big of a deal, but might be an important deal for the future of the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks picked up outfielder J.D. Martinez, and in return, they sent to the Tigers 3 infield prospects that nobody's really terribly fond of. Sean, do you want to talk a little bit about what the Tigers received as part of this deal and what the kind of the reaction's been so far?
So the 3 pieces that the Tigers received back, Darwell Lugo, Sergio Alcantara and Jose King. The first 2 are guys that were ranked on MLB.com's ranking of the Diamondbacks system. Lugo was 4th, Alcantara was 15th. King was not ranked. A lot of people don't actually like the return that the Tigers have gotten. And it's something that I think when you first see it, you're like, wow, that's not a lot for J.D. Martinez. The way J.D. Martinez has been playing this year, and the guys that they got back aren't exactly blowing it away, but the Tigers did something that the White Sox did not do when they moved Canely, Robertson, and Frazier, and that's packaged together their parts. And because of that, they're going for more of a quantity over quality type thing, and so maybe one of Lugo, Alcantara, or King are going to hit it. But for them, it might be better to cast that wide net than it is to just target one specific guy in a Diamondback system that's not really that strong.
So I guess, Ben, what I'd like to ask is, so if J.D. Martinez is receiving this kind of unimpressive return for him, could you talk a little bit about why Martinez should be worth perhaps a little bit more than that, even though he's just a 2017 rental?
Yeah, I think Martinez is kind of a guy that I fell under the trap that I thought he was a big power guy but didn't make that much contact. And then you really look at his numbers, and he's a guy that is going to hit probably around 300 and then walk a good amount and hit a ton of home runs. And obviously his defense isn't great, but he's a huge impact bat. I don't think you're going to find another guy that can hit that much on the market personally. And while the Diamondbacks aren't in a position right now where they're probably going to win the division, I think Martinez is a difference maker in that lineup. So I believe in paying a lot more for that kind of bet. So I mean, maybe my motto always when looking at these trades is that all these teams are pretty smart. There's no stupid teams. So I gotta imagine that I guess there just wasn't that much left on the market for Alaville and the Tigers to go after, which is honestly a little bit surprising because this is a lot lighter of a return than I would expect.
Yeah, Martinez consistently has put up around a 300 true average, which is well above what you would consider a league average, which is about 260. This year he's slugging over 600, and he's doing it in Comerica Park, which is not exactly the world's best hitter's park either. Lugo was ranked the number three prospect in the Diamondbacks system, according to Baseball Prospectus, at the start of the season. He doesn't really, though, project to be much more than a league average starter at third base or something like that. So he's not really what you would consider an impact prospect. And yeah, Martinez only has a few months of service time left, but you have to think he's the type of guy that a team could re-sign. They could try to extend, or they could really benefit from having first chance at signing him long term. He's not very old. He's I think this is his age 30 season that he's playing right now. It's actually his age 29 season, so that's even better than I thought it would be. I do think there might be kind of a glut of corner bats on the market in general. The Mets have guys that have been talked about. There's plenty of teams that seem to have bats that can fit in a corner. I'm kind of wondering if the Diamondbacks might have made this move a little bit early, or rather the Tigers might have made it too early, and maybe if another team had an injury, they might have felt a little bit more motivated to make a deal or offer something a bit more. Sean, what do you think? Do you think that this was one of those kinds of moves that maybe the Tigers struck too early, or do you think the market for Guy Martinez's caliber just isn't there right now?
I think that they did strike too early. I think that they should have packaged Martinez together with someone like an Alex Avila or Justin Wilson. The return is obviously what you're happy to see as a Diamondbacks fan, because the Diamondbacks haven't exactly made the best trades in the last couple of years.
That's putting it mildly.
At least this one wasn't to the Braves, but it looks like they're at least trying to go for it this year, which is something that we were wondering at the beginning of the year. You saw the rumor that they might be open to moving Pollock. I think it was in like May, but I'm glad to see them go for it, and I'm glad to see them make a move this early, because they're not really, I hate to call this a bad return, because like you said, teams know more than we do, but I mean, if you look at Lugo, Alcantara, and King, it's not really that flashy. Alcantara is a glove first 21-year-old. He grades out as a 70 defender on MLB.com, and he's a 60 arm, but that just sounds to me like another Jose Iglesias, which was weird because the Tigers already have Jose Iglesias. So I'm not sure what they were hoping to get out of this trade other than maybe now they're able to move Iglesias.
Yeah, I got to say, I think, first of all, you have to take into account the possible comp pick that they could have gotten. And I don't know. I mean, like, the centerpiece of this deal is Lugo, and Lugo's the number three prospect for the Diamondbacks, and the Diamondbacks, ranked by Baseball Prospectus, are the 28th best farm system in baseball. So
now probably even worse.
Yeah, which is surprising. But, yeah, I mean, they might be behind the Angels, which is horrifying. But, yeah, so I mean, I don't know. Like, could they have gotten more by maybe keeping their fans happy, let Martinez finish the year with them, and then take the comp pick? I mean, I don't know. Maybe not, but this is such an underwhelming return that it does make me think about even that.
So I will ask one or two quick questions. The first being, do you think this puts the Diamondbacks in the driver's seat now? Do you think that they are on track to be the number one wild card team? I'll ask that to both of you.
Yeah, I do. I mean, the Diamondbacks, especially, I think Martinez's profile fits their team perfectly. They're going to have a killer offense right now. And especially when you look at their pitching staff, too, is surprisingly really, really good, especially in that ballpark. So, I mean, Robbie, my God, I don't even understand. And Zach Godley, too, somehow. But I mean, the Diamondbacks are on a slide right now. They're 2-8 in their last 10. There's zero chance in hell that they're going to catch the Dodgers, who are, I think, are 30-4 now in their past 34 games, which is kind of absurd. when you look at that, the wild card spot, I do think they have a very good chance of getting that final spot, which is not the most exciting thing in the world because it is just a play-in game, so they could be one and done. But, I mean, when you're not giving up that much, I mean, I say go for it. That's not bad at all.
So I think the Diamondbacks will run for the number one wild card spot, but I just want to go back to kind of that market for JD Martinez, because you look, the teams that the Tigers were most rumored to be filling a need with by moving Martinez, it was the Cubs, the Rockies, and the Diamondbacks. The Rockies have a nice farm system, but they don't really have a need for another outfielder. They have a ton. The Cubs have sold off a bunch, and you have to doubt if they would try to move even more. So maybe this was the best offer they had on the table. Maybe there was no other team that was really looking to go out and spend that much on Martinez, considering maybe his injury history this year, maybe that he's a rental. John Morosi put up a tweet earlier today comparing him to saying that Cespedes got more 2 years ago, that Cespedes pulled back Michael Fulmer and Cessa. And it's like, well, they're not comparable. Like, they're rentals, but that's about the only place you can compare those two, because Cespedes was like a premium bat, and he was a premium glove in the field. And JD Martinez is only a premium bat, and so I wonder if we expected more, but the fact that Martinez has been injured and that he's a rental and the way the market was looking is just why we see what we see.
Okay, I mean, I think obviously the comp rules are a little bit different this year just with the new CBA, but I think at that point when there is a market that isn't really developing, you do have to ask, is it better to hang on to him and just take the comp pick? And I mean, I don't know, maybe you guys know better there, but I do think that there is an argument for, in that case, maybe just hanging on to him.
Yeah, I kind of would have expected that holding on to him for the comp pick would have been a little bit better than getting these three prospects back for the Tigers. But again, I'm not a prospect guy, so my opinion means less than nothing. I will say I really thought the Cardinals were going to be a suitor for Martinez, even if they weren't really, you know, going to be super duper buyers at the deadline. And I thought they could have offered somebody, you know, maybe just Magnus Sierra or someone in exchange for Martinez. I guess the thing about the Cardinals, though, is Tommy Pham has kind of turned into JD Martinez, so maybe they just are like, well, we'll use our double magic and create our own. So I think that might have been a reason that worked out so well for them. The last thing I want to talk about before moving on from these two teams, can we all just take a moment and appreciate Paul Goldschmidt this year for the Diamondbacks? I feel like nobody ever talks about him, which is insane, and he was kind of overlooked on the WBC team last year in March in favor of Eric Hosmer. Paul Goldschmidt's batting line right now in 400 plate appearances, 317, 435, 583, 21 homers, 14 stolen bases. Everybody overlooks the fact that Paul Goldschmidt is like basically the best base runner among power hitters.
Goldschmidt is essentially as good of a base runner as Mike Trout at this point, which is kind of a crazy thing among, you know, these power hitting types. And with Martinez and Goldschmidt and Pollock and Peralta in this lineup, I mean, the Diamondbacks are legitimately scary. It's just kind of frustrating for them, it must be, to be in the same division as the Dodgers, who are kind of all of a sudden the best team in baseball.
Yeah, right. I mean, you still look at that offense, especially when they don't have the Humidor and Chase Field, just the amount of home runs that are going to be hit there. They also have, I mean, you got to think about it, they also have Jake Lamb and David Peralta, and I guess Chris Owings isn't really good anymore, but he was good for like 3 weeks, so we can count him too. But, I mean, this is an offense that is really pretty terrifying and headed by Paul Goldschmidt, who I really hope now that the Diamondbacks are going to make a playoff push that maybe he'll get more into the national spotlight, because, I mean, you are talking about a guy that he's 6'3", 225, but he's one of the best base runners that you'll see in the game. When you talk about just the amount of speed he has and the amount of stolen bases, I mean, it's pretty insane.
Brandon Drury's another one, but I mean, I think I had Paul Goldschmidt as my NL MVP for the year in the Beyond the Box Score preseason voting. I had the Diamondbacks making the wild card, Lilavello winning Manager of the Year, and Paul Goldschmidt winning NL MVP. So I'm feeling pretty confident right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, that's a pretty decent humble brag. I like that.
It's not bad at all.
So as far as the MVP right now, if the season were to end today, would Goldschmidt be your MVP for the National League?
He's going to have to fend off Harper mania. I would love for him to. I think that he deserves it. I think he's been one of the most consistent and good players basically the National League's Kyle Seager, and he almost gets no credit for it, and I would love to see him win MVP just based on that.
Yeah, he didn't even start in the All-Star game. He got in like the 7th or 8th inning, which is kind of ridiculous, too. It's, yeah, I mean, I hope that they can overlook the whole I don't know why we don't care about Paul Goldschmidt thing and get him some votes, yeah.
I'm sorry, the correct answer is Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper is still the MVP of the league right now. But I do appreciate both of you guys playing. No, I'm with you. I'm totally on Team Goldschmidt, but I do think that Harper has been a slightly better hitter, and unfortunately, I think a slightly better hitter way trumps a substantially better base runner in the case of this. I mean, Goldschmidt's almost a full win better than Harper when it comes to base running at this point. But Harper's got that slugging percentage, which very quietly is just as good as Aaron Judge's this year, which is it's kind of crazy considering everyone can not stop talking about Aaron Judge, but Bryce Harper's just basically hitting as well as he is. I think he's still younger than Aaron Judge or something like that. So, I mean, that's just ridiculous.
And he really cooled off. He had that hot start to the season. And then from that point on, I think after the first month of the year, he was slugging 430 or something like that. So he really cooled off. But still, that just speaks to how good of a start he had, because it's just that dude is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, we'll move on to our last trade that we will discuss for the day. And it's great talking about Bryce Harper. We'll talk more about the Nationals. The Nationals acquired two relief pitchers from the Athletics. They picked up Sean Doolittle, the lefty, Ryan Madsen, the righty, and in exchange, they sent Blake Treinen over to the Athletics. They also sent over Jesus Luzardo, and I believe it's Steven Nice or Noose. Apologies to anybody who knows him personally and can actually pronounce his last name. Again, not a prospect guy, pretty obvious. Ben, I'll throw it over to you. What do you think about this move for the Nationals? Do you think this was what they needed to do to build up their bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Doolittle and Madsen aren't that elite closer that everybody thought the Nationals should get. But at the same time, when you look at the price of relief pitching on the market, just like a guy like Tommy Canley, how much he cost. I mean, him and Robertson, of course, combined. But I think – and then anybody else that might be available is only going to be more expensive. So, I mean, I think this is a really shrewd move. They didn't give up, I think, anybody that they're going to really miss in the long run. So, I mean, I really like that. Madsen has a 2 ERA this year. He has a pretty good track record going back to, 2004. I didn't realize he was that old. And then Sean Doolittle, he's always going to be an injury risk, but also he strikes a ton of guys out, doesn't walk anybody, and performs when he's on the field. So, I mean, I like that they got those two arms and didn't have to give up too much from the system.
Sean, what do you think?
Now you have a bullpen of Doolittle, Madsen, Matt Albers, and Eddie Romero. All have been really good, but is that really a bullpen that you want to go into the postseason with when you're one of the best teams in the National League and you're looking to unseat the Dodgers? Personally, I don't think it is. I wrote about it at Beyond the Box Score. They need to go out and get something, whether it's a starter because Joe Ross is down with Tommy John, or it's another arm for that pin. Their rotation has the most innings this year of any rotation in the league, and that might actually hurt them in the stretch run if they get to the playoffs and they have all these innings and then guys have fatigue and Strasburg makes it there and he struggles because he's fatigued or something like that, some kind of hypothetical like that. I think they need to go out and get a starter. But you saw when the Yankees did that trade. I saw a Yankees beat writer. One of the reasons he was saying the Yankees went out to get relievers was because that starting market is so weird and so weak. And so I wonder if they would just try to add by making the bullpen super strong and hope that Edwin Jackson holds out and hope that you can leave Roark in the rotation instead of putting Roark in the bullpen. But I really think they need to go out and get another bullpen arm. This is a good start. They don't have the worst bullpen in the league anymore, but maybe they have a bottom 20 now.
That's not what you want. No.
Yeah, you said you hope that Edwin Jackson holds out.
Yeah, I was gonna.
Maybe the craziest thing you've ever said on this show. they don't have really anybody else behind him. I mean, AJ Cole is, I guess, the next guy up. It's interesting to look at the team right now because it's like, this is a team that was supposed to be a real juggernaut coming into the season. They look like they had a really strong starting lineup. They had a really strong starting rotation. And now after some of the injuries that they've been through, they're starting Chris Heisey, they're starting Wilmer Defoe, they're starting Brian Goodwin, and they're starting Edwin Jackson at some point, which it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Matt Albers was this team's closer for a period of time, which, you know, if anybody has ever listened to Effectively Wild, Matt Albers as closer is not something that happens in the wild. It's something that only happens in theory. So it's surprising to see that they had really strong starting lineup. I thought they even had really strong depth, and it really hasn't come through at this point. So, yeah, maybe another move is in the offing. It's just, like you said, the market for starting pitchers is so wild and so weird. If they were to go out and try to get a guy like Sonny Gray and compete with these other teams that apparently are interested in Gray, it's tough to imagine, like, would they really just be willing to give up the last of their kind of really impactful prospect pieces? I mean, obviously, they probably wouldn't deal Victor Robles unless it was Chris Archer type coming back in return, but I mean, maybe Eric Fetty goes out in a Sonny Gray deal and then, you know, one or two other pieces. I mean, do they even have the chips to go out and get a top-end starting pitcher, you think?
I think that any move they make would have to almost require a starting pitcher and a reliever. They would want to probably get two back, I would assume, because you don't have the prospects to piece out one guy and then piece out another. An idea that I had, if the Braves had actually wanted to sell off, was that they could go chase R.A. Dickey and Jim Johnson, because Jim Johnson's been really good. But I doubt they do that. I doubt any of those two teams have a desire to make that move. But I think they have to get two back in a deal, because they're not going to move those prospects for just one.
Yeah. What do you think, Ben? Do you think that the Nationals should be done here, or you think they should keep going?
I think they have to keep going. I think they have like kind of a duty to keep going here, and I'm not sure what they're going to get. I think Victor Robles is the kind of talent that I don't think you can really give him up unless you are going to get somebody like Archer. I don't even think Gray is enough to give up Robles. The Nationals are so high on him. But I do think that they have enough other pieces, like in a guy like Fetty, as you mentioned, that I think they have to go out. I think I'm kind of surprised that they couldn't get their hands on Robertson or Conley, because I mean, Conley, whatever. Because I think that would have been a really ideal trade for them, just to get those two to strengthen the pen over Madsen and Doolittle, who aren't quite that level. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do think if they're going to build, I think they got to keep building on that bullpen, which is really it's really disappointed. And I think the offense will figure it out. I think they have enough front end rotation depth and Scherzer, Strasburg, and I think Gio Gonzalez that I think once they do make the playoffs, because it's pretty likely they do, that they can have those three guys carry them through a series. But I think I wouldn't feel comfortable going into October with the bullpen they have right now.
Yeah. It's nice to say that they really needed to go out and get one of those elite types of relievers. But at the same time, who's really on the market for an elite reliever that the team would be able to get? The name that comes up sometimes is Addison Reed of the Mets. But do you think the Mets are really motivated in making a trade with the Nationals at this point? I mean, even if somebody really good came back in return, and then, you know, what other guys? Because if you talk about like Tony Watson or somebody like that, that's probably equivalent to getting back Doolittle or Madsen, I would think.
So you mentioned the Mets, and I think out of all these three trades, one of the big takeaways is that the Mets have to be kind of discouraged. The return for the elite level outfielder that Martinez is was not something that should give them comfort when they're trying to sell Jay Bruce and Curtis Granderson to other teams. And at the same time, really, Addison Reed is their big chip, but you're running out of places to almost move him to, and you'd think it's a perfect match. But yeah, I wonder if they would trade in division with the Nationals.
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's take a couple of minutes and quickly talk about the Athletics, because the Athletics are weird, man. Like, this is a good trade, I think, from the Athletics standpoint in terms of getting rid of Madsen. I'm not sure trading Doolittle was the best possible move for this team, although, to be fair, they probably did want to sell high on him when he is pitching healthy and pitching well. I'm just not sure about the return for these guys. It's possible Blake Treinen could turn out to be the Ryan Madsen of next year. It's still possible. And the pitchers that the prospects that they got in return, they're good but not great. And I wonder if the Athletics are kind of just spinning their wheels at this point, getting back okay talent. I mean, I'm not sure they could have gotten more for these two guys, but I just kind of am curious as to what the long game is with the Athletics at this point. Ben, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I do trust Billy Bean in the front office to get a good return, and I wrote up Blake Treinen for the transaction analysis, and I'm really high on him, so I can talk about him a bit more. But with the prospect side of things, I'm not by any means a prospect expert, but I think the guys that they just from reading, I think some people were really high on Lizardo, if that's how you pronounce his name. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think considering if you look at I'd say like. If you want to compare this to the Yankees deal, where you see Robertson and Canely, who I think are both better than Madsen and Doolittle, and then there's, of course, Fraser Tostin, I think this is not that bad of a deal, to be honest. It's not the level – I mean, because no one's really, I'd say, crushing the White Sox or Rutherford. I think that's a solid return, and I don't think that the Athletics made off that much worse considering the kind of players that they were getting back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody thinks of Lizardo or Noose as like one of those top 100 prospects. And Rutherford, since he was drafted recently, has a lot of upside. Sean, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I'm high on Treinen like Ben is, but you also have to remember that the Nationals took on all of that salary. And for the A's, that might be more important than some of the other teams. I know that kind of the small market team is a myth now, but I think that factored into it a little bit. The way that Sean Doolittle struggled with injuries, they're selling high, like you were saying, and they don't have to worry about dealing with an aging reliever who's getting paid. I believe he was getting paid, was it seven or was Madsen 7.5?
Madsen was about 7 2/3, so 7.6 million, give or take. So Doolittle is making less than that. I think he's around the 4.5-5 million mark.
Aging an aging reliever who struggled with shoulder injuries and those can be recurring. And what's the old saying? Like the biggest indicator of future injury is past injury. I think that it was a way for them, just like you guys were saying, to kind of sell while they're healthy and move all of that salary.
Well, yeah, and the Athletics are always looking to move salary. It's just at this point, like, you know, what are they supposed to – what's their contention window, I wonder? Like, do they – this pushes things back a little bit, sure, and, you know, you have to sell relievers for prospects. I get it. But I just am not sure what the end game is here for the Athletics at this point. Or I'm not even sure that this really dramatically changes things for the Athletics. I just I keep being concerned for, you know, they can't do a true rebuild the same way some of these other teams do, it seems like. So when is the point in which we'll see the next competitive Athletics team is my question.
Yeah, I've always gotten a little bit blasted. I've talked about this on Twitter about I'm never the biggest fan of Athletics. I'm the kind of guy that thinks teams should either go all in or all out. And the Athletics have kind of been in, I guess you could say, baseball purgatory for a while, just been hovering between rebuilding, retooling, and competing. And I think it is a kind of plan that they've made work for a while, but not really the kind of plan that I'd be all for. And I think right now they're at a bit of a crossroads where they have pieces they can sell, like Sonny Gray. I guess you can look around the rest of Chris Davis, some other guys like that they can sell off. But at the same time, they do have guys like Sean Manaea, Jarrell Cotton, Kendall Graveman that are going to come back and be better for them. So, I mean, if they think that they can take that kind of team next year into a contender, which is something that Billy Bean certainly done before, then I think that they can stay pat. But I also see a pretty clear way for them to kind of go into a little rebuild.
You saw Billy Bean come out the other day and say that he wants to do a rebuild, which is not something that any of us, I'm sure, are used to hearing Billy Bean say. He's not the rebuild kind of guy. But and if they go that route, then Gray will be gone. Alonso will be gone. You have to wonder if they'll move Chris Davis. And I don't think we'll really see the path forward to the next good Athletics team until they move all these pieces. And I wonder to what extent that they would actually do something like this.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think one of the bigger issues hasn't even been like the moves that Bean's made, although the Josh Donaldson trade kind of looks a horrible, horrible mistake. But like from a player development standpoint, they've had some relatively high upside, high talent prospects, and it doesn't really seem like any of them have worked out too well recently, with the exception of Sean Manaea, who I think still holds some, you know, some capabilities. I mean, Franklin Barreto hasn't really worked out too well. Daniel Gossett just came up, but you know, you look at some of these other guys. Jarrell Cotton really didn't take off the way we thought he would. Frankie Montas is still coming, but you know, you're kind of curious as to if there might be something in player development that's keeping them from reaching their heights, or if they're just maybe identifying the wrong guys in trade.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, we always think of that kind of team as a guy that team that develops talent, and I think they've always developed talent that performs well in the minor leagues and turns into a good trade chip. Like guys like Addison Russell, Billy McKinney, and I'm just thinking about the Cubs deal, but I mean, they have a lot of other examples too where they develop players, they look pretty good, and then they trade them away. So, I mean, there is not the greatest track record of guys that develop through the system and perform at the big leagues for them. I do think Franklin Barreto is a guy that can still be pretty good. I mean, he kind of stalled out a little bit this year in AAA, but he's still only 21, only got 11 big league games in. So, I mean, I'm not really going to say yet that they're the new Seattle Mariners of prospect development, but at the same time, you do have to ask the question that, yeah, are they well fit to go into a rebuild and make all this talent work out?
I'm really curious to what extent they're going to want to do a rebuild, and I don't know if they're I'm not a prospect guy like you guys have said, but yeah, I think it's a fair question to ask, and I think that they're in a position right now. Brian, you should be proud of me. I haven't talked about Jed Lowry yet, even though we're talking about the Athletics.
Oh, my God.
there's probably no player better suited to move right now than Jed Lowry, specifically to the Red Sox, because they missed out on Frazier. Bogaerts is hurt. You don't know how long Bogaerts is getting an MRI, I think, today. It's a perfect fit for the Red Sox. Jed Lowry is a shortstop, third baseman. And I think that if you're looking for the next guy on the ace to go, it'll be Lowry, and then I'm really curious to see if they move Gray right now or they wait till the offseason.
If Jed Lowry is playing shortstop for the Boston Red Sox, something has gone horribly, horribly wrong for the Red Sox. And I'm not saying that it's possible, but that guy is a terrible defender. Like,
yeah.
I think that it would be a probably the best possible move for the Red Sox if Bogaerts is going to miss time to put Lowry at third base if they acquire him and, I don't know, run Devin Marrero or something out there at shortstop, because Lowry is so bad of a defender. I think that would make the guys like Rick Porcello pretty frustrated. But, yeah, I mean, it is time for them to deal Lowry. It is time for them to deal some of these other guys. It's just a question of what the market is going to be for Sonny Gray. I mean, we'll end our discussion with this because he seems to have come up a few times. Ben, do you think Sonny Gray gets traded at the deadline?
I don't know. I think there's usually a rule about trading big pieces at the deadline. You're supposed to wait till the offseason. But at the same time, the Athletics do have a lot of leverage. Maybe they want to let Gray finish out the season and show that he is healthy and he's not actually bad at baseball, rebuild his value a little bit more. But I think given the market, it is a really weird market. It's kind of hard to understand exactly what's going on there. I think they're going to – if they get a good offer, I think they'll jump at it. But there's no reason to be desperate about getting rid of him right now.
All right, Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I echo what Ben said. There's no reason to move him just for the fact of moving him. He's got a year left. Is there really that much value in having a guy 2 months and then a full year as opposed to a full year if you're saving prospects? I don't know. But I think that it's something that – they definitely should not rush into, because this offseason there's going to be a bit of a rush for starters, because you have some that are on the free agent market. You have the Mets looking to get back into contention. I know they have starting pitching that's flush, but you're going to have more teams that think they're contenders and think they can go out and make a push in the offseason than you do right now. So I think waiting in the offseason is a smart move.
Yeah, I just I hold this concern that Gray could fall apart at kind of any minute, given what happened with him last year. And, you know, last year it actually wasn't that bad. I mean, he was still an average starting pitcher last year, but God forbid the guy gets injured. I mean, then the A's are left really holding the bag on him.
Yeah, and I mean, you always run that risk with guys who you're looking to move that are not just going to be rentals, but Yeah, it's something that if you know your players and you trust your training staff and you trust your coaches that are close to him and say he's not going to, then I guess that helps with it, but you're never sure. You're never completely sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a fair point on Brian's part, but at the same time, like, if you look at the flip side of it, Gray started the year hurt, missed all of April, came in to May, had around a 5 ERA. June, he had a 3.50 ERA. July, now he's at only through 12 innings, a couple starts, but he's only given up, I think, 2 runs and 2 starts. So, I mean, on one hand, do you want to sell him now before he breaks down? But there's also the way to look at it that maybe they want to let him rebuild his value a little bit more, distance himself from that horrible year and the bad start to the season.
Nope, that's definitely a good point. I definitely a lot for the Athletics to consider, definitely a lot for us to consider. Well, we'll hopefully have another episode of the show for everyone to listen to in the future as more of these moves get made. Maybe we'll even talk about some of those minor moves we perfected earlier in the season. But, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today and for coming in on short notice to fill in. We really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, no problem. It was great.
So that'll do it for today's show. We're DFA Podcast on Twitter. You can find us at DFA Podcast. You can find all of our work, Ben's, Sean's, and myself over at Baseball Prospectus. You can also find Ben at The Dynasty Guru. You can also find Sean at BP Mets and at Beyond the Box Score. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.